Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 8. Today we've got Eric Taylor, Lydia Tabbitt, Kirk Pettis, and myself, Matt Winter. We're going to be talking about Common Core. Eric, I believe we've got a couple of clips and a bunch of opinions about this. Where do you want to start?
Well, do we want to open up for general discussion, or do we just want to dive right into Common Core? I know Kirk had a few thoughts on a few things that you'd like to touch on before we hit Common Core.
Well, I'd just like to compliment Rand Paul on his 50-state program, where he's going to be fighting for the presidency in all 50 states. He's going to be set up for his presidential run in 2016. He has not claimed he's going to run yet, but he's done the legwork before anyone else, and he apparently is setting the stage to be the Republican nomination. So I'm kind of excited about that. Any other thoughts about that?
It looked like he had a pretty good discussion at UC Berkeley last week, where he had a pretty good reception from, I think it was the College Republicans over there. And, it was received pretty well. But I haven't really heard too much about the 50 state effort. What exactly does that mean, or what's going on?
Well,
there?
He has something around 200 people all set up, and they're going to be set up in all 50 states. So there's going to be people, organizing, to set up the delegates in caucus states and the primaries and whatnot. So it should be, he's setting the groundwork early, which he's going to be the forerunner, and he is. He has the highest percentage for the most sought out Republican running for president so far, but it's not by much, but it's good enough for right now. But the best thing I look at is, if by him being involved, he's going to push the mantra towards liberty. And so any Democrat running against him or any other Republican challenging him will be forced to state more liberty-minded aspects, and it should bring the whole conversation towards liberty. So I hope that's the case.
So was this something that was really announced today? Because I'm looking through.
I just saw it on Drudge Report today. It was one of the headlines.
I did see the
headline.
Yeah, I see Rand Paul builds 50-state network, courts mainstream support for presidential bid. So he has a network built throughout all 50 states. And so this must be the first real, formal announcement that he has an organization in place across the country, which is that's a positive. And there's certainly I've seen some decent pro Rand Paul articles written over the last couple of weeks, but he's certainly he's getting hit a little bit for his libertarian stance in some periodicals, but
that's to be expected, right?
Yes.
I did see an interesting article, though, about Bill Maher saying that, he would be, saying that he would be the candidate to go against Hillary or something. He would be the only one that would really shake things up to run against Hillary Clinton. And I think I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something to the extent of, if you have Rand Paul running against Hillary Clinton, he will really make her look like a neocon,
Right.
Yeah. And, like I said before, this really will drive the message towards liberty. Liberty aspects will have to be argued, and it will be much more on the center stage than Ron Paul could ever put in the debates. And the popularity Rand Paul will get it should make a difference. But one thing I want to say was funny in that article, Rand Paul had that 50-state initiative. They were talking about when Ron Paul was running for president in Iowa, he had no name recognition. Yet he really won the straw poll and everything. I, I, it, was it the straw poll or I don't know. He pretty much won Iowa, but they buried it. And yet they say Ron Paul had no name recognition apparently, but Rand Paul now has 95% name recognition amongst Republican voters. So I found that kind of a skewed analysis, but I really believe Ron Paul won Iowa, but anyways, we don't need to beat the bush about that. So
yeah, it looks like I'm just reading an article in the Washington Post where Rand Paul is polling at 16% within the Republican Party and Paul Ryan's at 15%. And,
why I said it was a narrow margin that Rand Paul had the lead, but.
Well, and then I saw another poll where I think it was Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, and maybe Ted Cruz. It was Ted Cruz for sure, and Chris Christie, I forget who the fourth was, and then Rand Paul, and they had compared them all against Hillary Clinton, and I think she had 47 against all of them, and then Rand Paul had the highest of the four Republican candidates with like 44%, I think.
Yeah, so it's positive. It'll be interesting to see what happens. There are a couple of years, and it's good to see that, kind of the foundation is in place because of the fact that primary season and caucus season is abbreviated this time around. So it certainly helps to, get the pieces in place, quite a bit.
This will be a recurring topic in the future, obviously. But yeah. I had one other aspect to think about towards Liberty that happened recently, because I'm coming from I'm in Steamboat, Colorado currently. Mm-hmm. And I have been coming to Colorado for like the last 5-6 years. And now marijuana is legalized. We had this conversation a few weeks ago. Yep. And I find it very, just being in the public or, on and about on the ski slopes and whatnot. Years ago when I'd come here, this could be all circumstantial, who knows, but every time I'd ski, you'd smell weed everywhere. When you're going up chairlifts, when you go in a gondola and whatnot, this was the four years ago. Once it was legalized in the vote in 2012, last year was the first year you hardly ever, there was only one occurrence where I would smell weed on the ski slopes after it was legalized. And then this year when it came into full effect, I haven't smelled marijuana one time on the ski slopes.
What do you attribute that to?
Because it's legal. When it was illegal, people would have to do it wherever and however. And now that it's legal, it's just people, I don't know, maybe it's hard for me to explain, but it's just a weird, you would think the opposite would be true from the fear mongering of legalization of a controlled substance to where all of a sudden it's going to be prevalent around society.
So it's not the volumes of weed that you're smoking desensitizing your nose, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. That's it. Yeah. No, I did have to, one day I ran and I did have to check out a store just to see how the whole process was. Cause
oh, absolutely.
Whole, just to see it, a legal store selling marijuana is something that I have yet to witness. And since I'm a proponent of it, I had to check it out. And it was like going into, certain jewelry or gold stores where you have to go enter a door, get buzzed in, show them your ID, get buzzed in, go to the next room. I don't know if this was just, I only went to one little store. And so who knows if that transcends to all of them or whatnot, how the regulation is. But it was, it's just been interesting to see how now that it's legalized and how you would think you would smell weed all the time. Like you do walking down the street and smell people smoking a cigarette. You'd kind of think that would be the same thing with now that's legalized, you're going to smell it walking down the street. And I have seen it completely the opposite, where before when it was still illegal, I would smell it all over the place. And now that it's legalized, it is like so far few in between that it's crazy. I can't believe that I haven't smelled it once on the ski slopes, and that boggles my mind that it's legal. So
well, I guess it's kind of a cool kind of a cool bit of circumstantial information.
Yeah, and it might be circumstantial and exclusive to my timing of where I am, but I find that highly illogical since it's, you know, from how prevalent it was years ago.
Sure.
And how few, and people would even speak about it years ago that, oh yeah, you get in the gondola and it just reeks of marijuana from people's, you know, smoking on the way up the ski slope or whatnot. And now it's nothing of the sort. So it's just an aspect of liberty I wanted to interject. And yeah.
So cool. How does that work? Do you see, when you're out there, do you see people just smoking, you know, outside or, you know,
no, I haven't seen anyone smoke it anywhere. That's what's so funny. It's legal. Okay. When I went to the store, there was maybe like one other person in the store.
Yeah.
And then by the time I left, there was, you know, all of a sudden it was mid-afternoon or whatnot. And all of a sudden there was like 5-6 cars there or something. But I didn't have a chance to really talk about it, but with the customers or the people working there. But I don't know. It's just very interesting that the fear people have is that, you know, oh, marijuana will be so prevalent everywhere and it'll become a part of society when it's anything but the case currently in Colorado here. So
did you see a lot of people in the store when you're, you know, the dispensary when you're in there, or what was that?
Well, when I went in there, I was one of like two, and then by the time I left, there was probably a half dozen people in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been fairly consistent big business, it seemed to me. But yeah, and that's what just blows me away, that it's not, for how often I would smell it in the air when it was highly illegal, when now it's been legalized and now I don't smell it anywhere. It's funny.
Yeah, the thing about it is even I don't really think it makes much of a difference as far as the percentage of people who choose to do that, if it's legal or not illegal, because it's under 10%, you know, either way, of people who decide to do it. So, you know, maybe, you know, that's just a good example, of people not feeling like they have to hide or, you know, be evasive or anything along those lines. So that's an interesting experience. One of the other things that popped up into my mind, you mentioned when we were talking about this on a podcast a few podcasts ago, is the fact that you thought that the high rate of taxation on marijuana would still fuel the underground economy. Do you have that feeling that that's the case, or do you have a feeling like, you know, people need to pick it up, they'll just go to a dispensary and, you know, the extra tax is fine and, you know, it's becoming, you know, just a understood part of the process for people who decide to do that?
Yeah, I think that's the case, where people are fine paying the tax where to be legal, because, and it also falls through, it's, you know, it's still an organism that you have to grow and process. And so by it being legal, they process it correctly and whatnot, and they want it to be a certain quality. And so when it's illegal, I think people just, you know, it's not like you go out there and, oh, I want that. Never mind. I'm not going to buy that. No, it's when people want it, when it's illegal, you kind of force them to buying whatever is available.
Right, right.
And okay. So now it's, you know, it's actually, you're getting, I wouldn't, because that one argument always is, oh, it's, this isn't your, you know, your 70s low grade marijuana, which is debatable, but I don't know. It's just, you know, it refines the business, and it seems like it's very, there's a lot of regulations, and so people are very tempted about how things are going or whatnot. It's,
sure.
I don't know. I'm not educated in the whole thing. I only went in there once, and so I can only speak from whatever. But
well, I can tell you one thing. My personal experience is that I smoked a lot of weed while I was in high school, And I know that there's some crazy stuff going on with school right now, so I'm just wondering, you know, what are your guys' thoughts on Common Core?
That was an excellent transition, Matt Winter.
Yeah, that was a transition.
Hey, the troubles they're going to have in the future, they're going to be smoking a lot more in grade school even now.
Yeah, hopefully.
I'm kidding, but all right.
Yeah. So with that, I have probably a half a dozen clips, and I'm going to start off with a pro Common Core clip. And, you know, not a lot of people, I think ourselves included, have a, you know, a high level of knowledge as to what Common Core is about. But it's a standards-based education method that the Department of Education and other outside organizations are implementing. I think right now it's really being implemented in 46 out of 50 states. I don't think Minnesota is one of them.
No, Minnesota has adopted the English curriculum, but not the math, I believe.
Okay, that is correct.
Okay, so it's not all in.
Wisconsin has adopted both.
Okay, all right. So it's really a standards-based methodology with the goal of moving kids along through the K through 12.
Can I just take a stab at what kind of a basic overview of what Common Core is?
Yep.
Okay, so my understanding of Common Core, and granted I'm by no means an expert, but my understanding of Common Core is that it's a national set of academic standards for K through 12 that has been adopted, as you said, by 46 states. And the way in which it was sort of sold to the state government, they're calling it Common Core State Standards. And I think we'll get into this more, but the argument is that, you know, they're really not state standards. They're federal standards that were adopted by the states. And the way in which they were kind of presented to the states is they were linked to funding. So a lot of these states, before even the curriculum was fully developed, they were forced to sign on to it with the understanding that federal funding, so whether that be through Race Through the Top, the other way they were sort of sold on it was through waivers from No Child Left Behind. But basically, they're academic standards that that students across the country have to be proficient in through kind of standardized testing, is my understanding. If anyone wants to kind of add to kind of that basic overview, I guess.
No, I think that's a pretty good overview of what Common Core is all about. So with that, let's start off with a pro Common Core clip and discuss that a little bit. I have, like I said, a half a dozen clips that are both pro and con. So I'll go ahead and start this one up.
Like it or not, life is full of measuring sticks. How smart we are, how fast we are, how well we can, you know, compete. But up until now, it's been pretty hard to tell how well kids are competing in school and how well they're going to do when they get out of school. We like to think that our education system does that. But when it comes to learning what they really need to be successful after graduation, is a girl in your neighborhood being taught as much as her friend over in the next one? Is a graduating senior in, say, St. Louis as prepared to get a job as the graduate in Shanghai? Well, it turns out the answer to both of these questions is no. Because for years, states have been setting different standards for what students should know and be able to do at each grade level. That's making it too hard to know if our kids are really doing well enough overall, and if they can really compete for a job someday. What we really need are clear goals. That's where the Common Core State Standards come in. They're like a total sea change in education. Consistent, strong, clear benchmarks for English language arts and math. Here's how it works. You can think of kindergarten through 12th grade like a giant staircase. Each step is a skill your child needs to learn before stepping up to the next one. But right now, too many kids aren't really confident with, like, 2 plus 2 before they have to move on to 2 times 2.
We need more focus on the skills that help them move up the stairs, or they can slip up and fall behind. And there's another problem. What if everyone's stairs were made at different heights? Well, here we go again. They are. So, a boy in Seattle who's rocking an A in English literature could be getting a C on his Chicago friend's staircase. Oops. We need to create consistent steps in education, too. So first, each standard creates a landing on the staircase, a stop along the way as your child heads toward high school graduation. Each stop is a chance for every parent and teacher to focus on the skills their students are supposed to know at that step, no matter the zip code, language, or race. And more importantly, each standard makes sure all students are learning what they need to know to get to graduation and beyond. Because something like counting to 100 leads to understanding dollars and cents, which eventually leads to understanding how to manage a budget. Secondly, the standards are consistent from school to school, and they match up against international standards too. Now we know how we're doing compared to just about everyone. So even though local communities will still design their own curriculum with the same rules, everybody can compete on the same kind of staircase. But standards aren't learning. That's why we need teachers, parents, and students to help make that happen by working together to help kids meet these standards. The world's getting more and more competitive every day. But now, when our kids get to the top of their staircase, they can have way more options on where their life goes from there. Clear goals, confident, well-prepared students. That's the Common Core State Standards.
Oh, my God.
Give me a break.
Platitudes.
Hey, we should state that this video is from the Common Core website.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. If that wasn't already apparent, yeah.
Wow.
Students need to be comfortable with 2+2 before they go and to 2 by 2.
And did you know that they have moved back? Okay, so they're talking about all these clear benchmarks on, like, education and these clear standards for all students across the country. But, of course, these benchmarks that we're setting are going to be lower, and they're going to be lowering standards for many students. I was reading an article earlier today about how they were pushing back the academic standard for addition and subtraction from I think it was by the end of third grade they have to be competent in addition and subtraction. Addition and subtraction, I'm pretty sure I learned that in kindergarten or first grade. And then they were pushing the standard for multiplication and addition back another grade. So, like, the students, the requirement for multiplication and division was not required until the fifth grade.
Well, the whole thing is this is just the standard, so it's going to be tested on the standards every year. How the teachers implement it is their choice, but it's still going to have to be the standards that they adhere to. But that's the excuse of where this is the standard it's going to be, but the teacher can do it however they want. It's their little excuse to escape what they're pushing on.
And I read somewhere else that there's only a 15% leeway on what the teachers can do on adapting the curriculum or adapting to what they're teaching.
Right. It'll be interesting over time because really in order to hit standards metrics, you have to focus on the lowest common denominator because you are looking at school districts that have, you know, really high demographics, mid demographics, low demographics, and you're going to see standard scores skew from a high end to a low end. And the goal is to have a standard scoring level for all districts to indicate success at each grade. And the only way that you're going to do that is to really address the lowest common denominator. Because if you're looking at an inner city school district in Detroit versus, let's say, Chanhassen or Minnetonka, the level of success in math or English or science is going to be markedly different between the two. But the goal of Common Core is to say, here's our metric for all students to be successful.
So it's interesting to
nationwide.
It's interesting to me from the perspective of when I was graduating from high school was when they started to adopt the basic standards tests. And I know Lydia knows all about this, but I don't think Kirk or Eric, I don't think you guys were exposed to that. And in what these tests were is you need to show proficiency in writing, arithmetic. I think those are the only two that I was exposed to, but I know that it was one of those things where it was like the drinking law. When they changed it 1 year at a time. It didn't like take it away from the 18-year-olds. So when I was the first generation that was exposed to it, or the first year. So as I went up, I had to take these tests, and they were ridiculously simple. Like the least achieving kid at Minnetonka passed this thing without even blinking. I mean, it was the easiest thing you've ever seen. And that was considered the basic standards. If you didn't pass this, you couldn't move on to your next grade. They'd hold you back. It sounds very similar, but it sounds like an even more rudimentary standard than that.
Yeah, well, and that's state-based standards. I'm going to assume, what year was this? Do you know, Matt?
I graduated in 2002, so that would have been around 2000, maybe 1999.
So this is before, pre-No Child Left Behind.
So this has been around a very similar time frame.
So this would have been exclusively to Minnesota standards then?
Probably, the basic standards test.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing, because the first federal mandate that I'm familiar with is that the No Child Left Behind. And that happened in 2001, or it didn't get signed into law until 2002. But so, yeah, so you didn't experience No Child Left Behind at all. But
it actually shows 1998.
It sounds very similar to where, yeah, if you don't have this basic information, then, yeah, you're held back grade until you develop that.
Right. It shows here it was 1998. And it looks like there's some more changes done to it recently in 2010.
And as I was going through elementary, middle school, junior high, high school, we had standardized testing every year, so you know where you're at. So to me, that's, you know, there's not, you know, a lot of difference between what's been done and what Common Core is looking to do. The concern that I have is, I mean, if you want to have uniform standards, how do they do that? How do they define what metric is deemed to be successful across all schools within the country? You know, and to me, you have to cater to the lowest common denominator if you want
success in, yep, if you want your program to be deemed successful. But exactly, right now they're claiming otherwise, and the results are far from successful of this Common Core.
So this is, I think, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, but this is kind of my question is are you measuring students based on kind of like a ladder or a, you know, a benchmark system of topics or concepts, or is it like are those based kind of on concepts, or are they based on grades? Because if you link them to grades, then that's where you really have, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, but that's where you're really gonna have a problem. Because if you're pushing back addition and subtraction until the third grade, you're gonna be passing along kids that don't know basic addition and subtraction until they're 10 years old, because they don't have to know that until.
I would refrain from saying they're pushing addition and subtraction in the third grade. I think they're teaching that in kindergarten still. And I think actually the No Child Left Behind is actually more demanding than pushing things back. I think they're expecting too much on kids these days, to where they are reverse engineering. They want this outcome come graduation. And then they just reverse engineer saying, all right, to get to this point, we need to teach this much in this grade and then develop through there. When you develop naturally through, just like you said, you learn just addition and subtraction in kindergarten, first grade, and you kind of just build on from there, to where they're starting to teach in the first grade word problems that take a lot of mental analysis and how to properly structure a problem where you take words instead of numbers and put them into a number kind of system problem to where you can answer it correctly. And that is asking a lot from a first grader. And to base those kind of standards is what is making all these parents in an uproar, because all of a sudden other kids went from A's to C's, D's or whatnot. And all of a sudden parents are getting involved and furious over this because they know there's kids are trying to do good and they have been doing good. And now all of a sudden they're failing or getting poor grades to where societal pressure says you have to get A's to get ahead in life. So it's putting a lot of pressure on these kids and they're all stressed out. And it's because they reverse engineered that way, is they're just trying to implement too early is what I would say into what. And what in my what when I look at what they are trying to teach in the early grades now is more of mathematics around computer programming.
Yeah.
And so that could be good or bad. I don't know. Because that is going to be the future, but I think it's a lot to ask for a first grader.
No, it's been done before. The same type of focus was done in the 60s when the United States was concerned about the Soviet Union and they wanted to develop scientists. And now, Common Core is really one of the backers is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They want to, focus on engineering and that type of thing. But I think this brings up a decent opportunity to listen to a clip about a mother who's concerned about Common Core. This is a video that we talked about before the show that illustrates a mother's concern over Common Core and what it's trying to accomplish. So I'll go ahead and play it now.
Yeah, I haven't heard this. I'm excited.
So all that's done. Now, we are down to our public comment time. I would like to recognize Mrs. Karen Lamoureux, who has 3 minutes to speak.
Thank you.
You're welcome,
Madam Chairman and the Board. My name is Karen. I'm a mother of three in the Pulaski County Special School District. I am here today not speaking just...
Eric, you want to turn it down just a little?
On behalf of myself, I'm here representing 1,110 other parents, educators, and taxpayers in our state who have some very serious reservations about the Common Core Initiative. We are not alone in this regard. Six other states have pulled out of their PARC agreement. 22 other states currently have legislation pending to either get out of Common Core or to make significant changes to it. After listening to what was said this morning, I have come to the conclusion that this board is clearly as uninformed as the parents are or were when these standards were adopted. We were told the same thing that you were told, and that Common Core is a set of rigorous, college-ready, internationally benchmarked standards that prepare our kids to compete in a global economy. This is nothing more than an empty sales pitch for corporations and government agencies to profit from our kids and sell them downriver in the name of saving education. I have a math question for you, board members. Are you ready? Get your pencils out. I'm not kidding. Are you smarter than a Common Core fourth grader? Let's find out. The problem is, Mr. Yamada's class has 18 students. If the class counts around by a number and ends with 90, what number did they count by? I'll restate the problem. Mr. Yamada's class has 18 students. If the class counts around by a number and ends with 90, what number did they count by? Does anyone on the board have an answer? Five. And may I ask, madam, how did you come up with that answer?
18 and 9.
You know why? Because that's what makes sense, right? That's the way we were taught to do it in the fourth grade level. This, however, is what the Common Core standards expect our fourth graders to do. If they solve it in those two steps, they get it marked wrong. They are expected to draw 18 circles with 90 hash marks, solving this problem in exactly 108 steps. Boy Pimpers, this is not rigorous. This is not college ready. This is not preparing our children to compete in a global economy. Skipping rote memorization of multiplication tables is hindering their ability to master long division and fractions later on in the semester. And now our children, who were testing in the 80th or higher percentile in math last year, are now coming home with C's, D's, and F's on their report cards. Not because, as Arne Duncan would put it, that white suburban mothers think their children aren't as brilliant as they thought they were, but because, thank you. I encourage you to listen to us when we send you our emails, despite the comments that were made by our chairperson here today. Our concerns are not based on hysteria or propaganda. They are based on fact, and we are prepared to present those facts. Can you see the trembling in my voice? Parents have not had a voice here, and you need to listen to our concerns. We are moving forward with our legislature to make some very serious changes to this, and all I ask is that you bend your ear and take us seriously. We are college-educated parents. I come to you with 12 years of college education and a former member of the National Honor Society when I tell you this is not working, and it's not what they told you it would be. We will save the privacy concerns and the testing concerns for our legislature. But when it comes to standards, that's your ball court, and we need you to help us with this because this program is dumbing our children down. Thank you.
There we go.
That was very passionate.
Yes.
And well done. Yeah.
Well, as I hear it, Indiana just struck down the usage of the Common Core altogether. And one of the articles that
Georgia
I read recently
is in the process.
What's that?
Georgia as well, I think, is in the process of, or they have voted to delay it or to opt out of it, but they haven't figured, but the now I think the federal government is threatening to pull their funding or something like that.
Well, let me Let me give you an example. Oh, you're gonna pull your state? You do not care about these standards of setting your kids into a global marketplace, ready for college, ready for the workplace. But that's not what it is. Common Core takes over the standards of the state. You cannot adjust those. They are copyrighted. They are ingrained into once your state signs onto those, they're abiding by those new mandates set by the federal government. Sure, the states have a little freedom to move in between, but by the most part, once they sign on the dotted line for Common Core, they are bound by the measures.
Right, and I would say for me personally, that's probably one of my two biggest issues with Common Core is that, number one, I'm a firm believer that education is by no means one size fits all. People have different academic needs, learn differently. Learning is not one size fits all. That's my primary concern. The second being what you just said, Kirk, is that once responsibilities and these controls and this power over to the federal government, you have no influence. There's no way you're going to influence these things once you hand them over to a centralized federal, or a committee or organization or department, you're not going to have the influence that you can have today in local school boards. And so those, to me, are the two biggest issues with Common Core.
Could you imagine filling out a problem with 18 circles and 90 hash marks around each circle?
When you make that point, I have to tell you about this engineer's response to trying to help his kid do a math problem. So He's an electronics engineer, and he's helping his son go through this problem. And essentially, he's written a complaint to the instructor or the teacher on the answer sheet. So I'm gonna read this to you, and I just want to you're gonna love this. You're gonna love this.
Yeah, this has gone viral. Yeah.
Okay, so Lydia knows exactly what I'm talking about here. So the question is, Jack used the number line below to solve 427 minus 316. Find his error. Then write a letter to Jack telling him what he did right and what he should do, to fix his mistake. So essentially there's a number line And it starts out, there's like 10 hops or 9 hops. I'm not even going to try to explain. It goes 121, 127, 227, 327, 427. And it looks like the father tried to look at this and make some rationalization out of it. And honestly, I can't even make heads or tails of the number line myself. But the letter says, "Dear Jack, don't feel bad. I have a Bachelor of Science degree in electronics engineering, which included extensive study in differential equations and other higher math applications. Even I cannot explain the Common Core mathematics approach, nor get the answer correct. In the real world, simplification is valued over complication. Therefore, 427 minus 326, done mathematically, is 111. The answer is solved in under 5 seconds, 111. The process used is ridiculous and would result in termination if used. Sincerely, frustrated parent."
Well, that's precisely why this is based on computer programming, because there's multiple different ways to computer programming, to write any language in the program. And it's to think outside the box instead of just the simplified answer, which can create havoc inside a computer program, is my thinking behind it. But I love the example because, yeah, it shows, you know, you have this block, this number, and this number. In between, you have certain hashes which represent they should all be equal. And so from to get to this number, it should all be an even number. But anyways, yeah, all right, this is
Kirk,
the point. It doesn't matter.
I can totally understand that point that you're trying to say about computer programming. But honestly, somebody who's worked in IT for many years, I'm sure Eric will agree with me here. The problem isn't the ability of a processor to be able to do math. We're not having problems with the efficiency of processors these days anymore.
I'm not arguing. That's my whole point is, you know, some of this stuff is totally fine to teach, but it's not a standard that you teach on everyone. Well, you do not mandate this across the country and give up your sovereignty of a state to an educational system to mandate all this BS. I mean, it drives me crazy that's the whole point is getting back to liberty, and you don't give up your state sovereignty to the federal government, and especially extorted for money for the race to the top. But
right, and this is kind of just speculation on my own part, but I think a major push behind the Common Core is to create people to fill technology related careers. And I think a great deal of why, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was sort of involved with that. I think there's a significant, this is a push by the federal government to direct students in sort of technology related fields. And so I think, and this is just speculation on my own part, but my kind of speculation on this is that they're simplifying math and sciences to kind of make them appealing or to make them, accessible to a broader range of students, but to encourage more students to pursue those areas. But to me, the sacrifice is the standards and the actual understanding of these concepts. And I think it not only hurts, you know, the lower students, I think it hurts students in general.
Well, yeah, I think really what the goal behind Common Core is STEM
there's some validity in that concern or in that intention. I mean, that's the future. I support that, but I also agree with Kirk that it's a liberty issue. So sorry to interrupt.
STEM is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Yep. And this is not new. Like I alluded to earlier, this is not a new focus. It was a focus 40 years ago where, you know, let's train up kids to be engineers and mathematicians because of the fact that we're in a Cold War against the USSR. And now we're, you know, the United States is in a, as we're in the information age, we're in a intellectual competition with countries like India and China specifically, some Eastern Bloc European countries, to produce highly functioning engineers in various areas. And I think, to me, I think that's the motivation behind Common Core, which, you know, on the face is a noble motivation. But the problem that I have with it is that when you look within Common Core, the standards become bastardized. You have a focus on moving kids along, and as you focus on the whole playing field, you focus on the lowest common denominator. And we talked about there is more of a focus on problem solving. So you work more problem solving exercises within a math problem or engineering problem than you do through what used to be a rote way of learning. Like you knew your arithmetic tables, your multiplication tables. You moved up through algebra, trigonometry, calculus, and you knew what was going on there. But it seems like for whatever reason, the focus is more on problem solving or thinking outside of the box, which to me is not, you know, that's not that bad. If you focus on abstract thinking, that's not a bad way to look at things, because you need, if you're going to come up with good software code, or if you're going to be a good engineer, it's good to think about a problem in a holistic way rather than just an engineering perspective. But the problem with Common Core is that you baseline the standardized scoring metrics, and that's the real problem that I have with it.
Well,
right,
and that's what's so hilarious is that the people pushing this new Common Core are the very people that fought so tooth and nail against the No Child Left Behind, which was another federal mandate, and which all it did was set standards that you have to know this before you can progress. And apparently that was terrible, because all the teachers did was teach for the test then.
And that's what and that's the danger under Common Core.
Well, that's the exact same, that's my whole point, is it's the exact same thing, and all these people are praising it now. When under No Child Left Behind, Joe Morton of the Alabama State Superintendent said that by 2014, every child is supposed to test on grade level in reading and math. That cannot happen. You have too many variables and you have too many scenarios. Nobody knows. You can never what would ever happen. And the goal of 100% proficiency is unattainable. But yet, all of a sudden, this is the new cat's meow, the fix of the educational system. And it just blows my mind that, oh, just because a Republican, George Bush did the No Child Left Behind and everyone was up in arms about it. But now this Common Core thing is specifically even far worse than No Child Left Behind is to teach to these certain standards. And it's proven where schools are taking away liberal art type classes and moving them more towards science and or math and English classes. And it's specifically to teach to these new Common Core standards, and they're still failing at it. And it's pretty hilarious. I don't agree with either. I think the federal mandate's irrelevant. It doesn't need to be there. The only reason it's there is to give money to give federal money to these school systems. That it doesn't need to be that way to gain influence for the federal government. And I'm against both, but I find it hilarious how people are all for Common Core now, but we're for or against No Child Left Behind and then pushing this Common Core agenda now. So double standard.
And I agree with Eric that, you know, it that pursuing, you know, encouraging students to have an interest in the sciences and technology and mathematics, I think those are all noble goals. And even, you know, who's to say some of these Common Core teaching methods for some students might be helpful, might be the way that they understand things. But for me, the primary issue with Common Core is that learning and education are not one size fits all. And when you create kind of uniform standards for all students to learn things a certain way, you're going to have problems.
Yeah, I think that's the big issue with Common Core. You know, to me, it's education should be, we're all liberty people on here, and it should be individualized. It shouldn't be a cookie cutter, all fits all sort of curriculum, because every individual is different. Every individual has different strengths and weaknesses, which may not even show up on a standardized test. And that's, you know, to me, that's too bad, because there are plenty of individuals who have talent in various areas that may not show up strongly in a STEM-based test, but they may have, you know, more, you know, they may be stronger in liberal arts areas. And they
interpersonal have communication.
Exactly. So when you focus on a certain area for the entire student population, I think that's damaging. You need to have more of an individualized approach. So with that being said, we all have a certain level of respect for Ron Paul, and he has I have a clip here where he has an opinion on Common Core, and I think it ties in pretty well with the opinion that I just threw out there. So I'm going to go ahead and play this clip.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for Monday, May 27th. Common Core nationalizes and dumbs down public school curriculum. In addition to shredding civil liberties, launching a utopian global war for democracy, in going on a spending spree that would make LBJ blush, the so-called conservative Bush administration dramatically increased federal control over education via the No Child Left Behind Act. During my time in Congress, I heard nothing but complaints about this law from teachers, administrators, and most importantly, students and parents. Most of the complaints concern No Child Left Behind's testing requirements, which encourage educators to teach the test. Sadly, but not surprisingly, instead of improving education by repealing No Child Left Behind's testing and other mandates, the Obama administration is increasing national control over schools via the Common Core Initiative. Common Core is a new curriculum developed by a panel of so-called education experts. The administration is trying to turn Common Core into a national curriculum by offering states increased federal education funding if they impose Common Core's curriculum on their public schools. This is yet another example of the government using money stolen from the people to bribe states into obeying federal dictates. Critics of Common Core say it dumbs down education by replacing traditional English literature with informational text. So students will read such inspiring materials as studies by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, the EPA's recommended levels of insulation, and invasive plant inventory by California's Invasive Plant Council. It is doubtful that reading federal reports will teach students the habits of critical thinking and skepticism of government that the founders considered essential to maintaining a free republic. Like Obamacare, Common Core, now dubbed Obamacore by some, has sparked a backlash in the states, leading some to propose legislation prohibiting state participation in the scheme. I hope these efforts lead to states not just opting out of Common Core, but opt out of No Child Left Behind and all the other federal education programs as well. Parents can also effectively opt out of programs like Common Core by seeking alternatives to government education. It is no coincidence that as federal control over education increases, the quality of public education has declined and more parents have chosen to homeschool. To support these parents, I have established my own homeschool curriculum. Unlike Common Core, we do not dumb down any of our offerings. Instead, the goal is to provide students with a rigorous education in history, math, English, foreign languages, and other core subjects necessary to a well-rounded education. Unlike the top-down model of nationalized education, the homeschool curriculum is designed to encourage maximum input from parents and students. While the curriculum will reflect my belief and interest in Austrian economics, libertarian political theory, and the history of the struggle against state power, the curriculum is being carefully designed to not show bias toward any one religion. I hope all parents of any faith or no religious beliefs at all will feel comfortable using this curriculum. I believe it is important for those of us concerned with education and liberty to fight our battles locally. We must oppose further encroachment on the autonomy of local public schools and work to roll back existing interference while encouraging and supporting the growth of homeschooling and other alternative education movements. The key to restoring quality education is to replace the bureaucratic control of education with a free market in education. Parents should have the freedom to select the type of education that best suits their child's unique needs. Thanks for calling this update. A new update is placed on this number, 888-322.
I've not heard that before. That was pretty good.
Yeah, and one of the, you know, the states are and school districts are incentivized to pass as many students as they can through the Common Core tests, which, from what I've seen, aren't the most rigorous of tests because of the fact that, you know, as I alluded to earlier on in the podcast, they cater to the lowest common denominator.
Well, what I found, what was funny that Ron Paul said that I had not heard before, that it was Obamacore.
Well,
and that's the only thing I disagreed with the entire time, unless people say that President Obama was dumb enough to accept this and push it fairly mandating.
Well,
the whole Common Core thing, if we haven't talked about it yet, but the whole thing resides around crony capitalism, to where all these organizations have created this policy that push the federal government to back this stuff that is copyrighted, and they can only produce the tests, the questions, the books, the study guides, whatever. This is a $1 billion plethora for all these, I won't even put a money symbol on it. It's just it's guaranteed revenue for these companies to have the federal government dictate this stuff. And how it all came to be is very interesting. And there was this one little 16 or 15-year-old that from Arkansas that put a great YouTube, or he did a great presentation that's on YouTube. I wish I had the title of it, but people ever did further research on Common Core, and they will find this guy because it's one of the highest rated YouTube videos around Common Core. But the analysis this high school student did, it just showed the crony capitalists, all these companies buying up other companies to produce this system before it was ever even implemented. That's why this started well before Obama, in my opinion. So that's why I would never call this Obama core or whatnot. But it's but obviously Obama was snookered into it. And to where he would, you know, this gains more federal control, where any president will want this if they do regard the government in an antithesis way towards liberty, where government controls everything. This is perfect for the federal government. So,
right,
it's everything revolves around crony capitalism, and the federal government backed this. So, really, I would maybe Obamacare is a good thing, because maybe he is that dumb to where to push the federal government down the state's throats on in education, which affects everyone. And I believe that liberty can arise from this, because from the second audio clip we had was parents in outrage over this. And this will shed light on the idea of liberty, that if we can fight this towards liberty instead of the schematics behind Common Core and pushing that the federal government has no rights to be pushing down this educational standards through the states, that the state should do it. It should be more and more localized as possible, that this is should be a victory for liberty, and it should be a total negative against the federal government control over the whole thing.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Kirk, in that you know, you kind of look to who benefits from these policies. Where is the power going and where is the money going? And I think you were corrected in your assessment that it's crony capitalism. Who's going to benefit from nationalized education standards? It's going to be the publishing companies, the textbook companies, the test writing companies. They will have a monopoly now on this content, because all states are going to have to buy into it. So you have the crony capitalism in that regard, but you also have the growth and shifted power to the federal government, in that you'll have now these unaccountable education committees and departments that will take the place, or the power will be shifted from the school districts to the federal government.
So my question, and I think we've talked, you know, obviously not in this podcast, but we've talked about this before. What's the best way to combat this type of initiative? There's private schooling, there's charter schools, there's homeschooling. If this is going to become a nationwide initiative, families don't have to, you don't have to participate in it, right?
Well, you have to pass the Common Core standard. I don't know if this is true for homeschooling, but I know for charter schools, you have to pass the Common Core standards. You may not have to use the – I'm a little unclear on this. I'm not sure if you need to use the curriculum or not, but you do have to pass the Common Core standards. Or there's
– charter.
It's kind of complicated. It's like you either have to pass the Common Core standards or like a federally accepted equivalent or something, but there's no other option. So basically you have to pass Common Core, is my understanding.
So you have to learn the crazy method of doing mathematics and writing regardless.
That's
the whole joke of the thing, is all students should be learning what Common Core is perpetuating, that this is what we're preparing kids to do. But that they're saying it's either the Common Core way or that will never be accomplished without this new way. And it's copyrighted. Like, yeah, exactly what we were just talking about, the crony capitalism, where all these big companies have bought into this method. Technology companies are behind this, and Bill Gates Foundation, which is supposedly this new philanthropic throughout the world doing good, and yet Bill Gates will be making billions behind this measure. And I would guarantee he will end up making more money. Oh my God, I wish I had the quote. Who's the guy that just quit? He was on a 5-year term that was running Bill Gates' foundation for him, that set most of this stuff up. Oh man, I wish I could remember it now. But
I don't know.
They labeled this new term. I shouldn't even attempt it because I can't remember, but it was something about philanthropic capitalism or something like that, where you do philanthropy across the world, and yet you're still making buco bucks behind it at the same time, where you're organizing these companies behind your philanthropy. And it's just, it's absolutely hilarious to where Bill Gates is praised for this kind of stuff. And it's nothing but crony capitalism, buying influence in government, which is forcing federal mandates down on people's throats. And which, in turn, you have to give your money and taxes, like Ron Paul said, you give your taxes to the government, and then they go and bribe you and to gain more influence in your state and local municipalities and whatnot. It's absolutely absurd. And of course something like this would happen under Obama's term. But No Child Left Behind was a stepping stone into this. And the whole process of this whole public school system is every failure will lead to a new improved, I'm doing that in quotations, form of educational standards. And so that's why I hate to argue the schematics behind this Common Core thing about the questions that are asked, the way they process this, the standards that they create behind it, because this will fail like all the other things fail. And there will only be a new topic, a new system, global core of higher education that our kids are going to learn. And then we're going to have to battle the schematics on that. Get it down to more localized entities, state at the maximum level. And it's the more local, the better. And that's exactly what liberty is and what we are always arguing. And it's, to me, it's no surprise that something like this happens, but it's nothing more than federal bribery. And we see it on all levels of government.
Right. And we as libertarians, you know, hold individuals and individual rights and individual individualism in the highest regard. And this is clearly an attack on that. So I think it affects not only, you know, libertarians. I think it impacts, as Eric, I think, was kind of alluding to, is, you know, the school choice movement. And you know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, education is not one size fits all. And so what is the correct, you know, path to take? And I think we all can agree that a uniform, one-size-fits-all, federally implemented standards is not the answer.
We're beyond the point of no return. The federal government has its tentacles and everything. So the only solution that I can see as a mandate is the school waiver voucher system, where you can move your student. And I think that's what the biggest reason people fought that No Child Left Behind policy is because if schools failed for 3 or 4 years in a row of the standardized testing, that the parents had the opportunity to remove their student from that school and send them to any other school that would be better if there was one available. And I think that was an attack on the Department of Education and the unions behind it. And that was the crux of the matter, where that No Child Left Behind had to be defeated because of that ingrained policy in the law, to where it was an offhand school voucher system, where if that school is failing, then fine, I can move my student, my child, to another school that is progressing better. And I think that would lead is a school voucher system, and that will be fought to kingdom come of the Department of Education.
I think that's a really good point. And unfortunately, that brings us up to our wrap up time of an hour and a half.
Oh, can I do one other thing?
We've only been on for an hour.
We got time, Eric.
Yeah, Matt. We got time.
I think we got to go another 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But, Eric, what were you bringing up?
Well, I think it's one of the challenges, and I don't know how this is done in the public school curriculum realm, is to really focus on tailoring education to an individual level, because there is such a focus on a standards-based curriculum, and to me that's just completely wrong. You have, and I certainly alluded to this earlier in the podcast, but you need to focus on each individual's strengths and weaknesses. You understand what they're good at, what they're not good at, you know, increase their strengths, focus on the weaknesses a little bit and bring them up, you know, to a respectable level. But you certainly shouldn't try to, and to me, when looking at Common Core, the focus is just to move people along at the lowest level, you know, have the teachers hit their metrics and move the students along. And even when looking at teachers, if you have good teachers, put them in different districts. If some districts have a lower level of high performing teachers, move high performing teachers from one district to another.
But it's a very slippery slope.
Well,
yeah, it is. Who's going to tell the teacher they have to move?
Well, and I think this is. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Liddy.
Oh,
go ahead.
And I think this is the appeal, right, of the school choice movement, is that it really emphasizes things that I think we all would agree would be maybe possibly good solutions, which are choice,
firing people,
choice, you know, just choice in private schooling versus charter schools versus homeschool versus
vouchers.
If you're public schools, whatnot. It encourages choice, and it encourages competition, because once you have other choices, like, you know, charter schools or private schools or homeschooling, the public school has to
compete.
Keep in stride with everything else.
Yep.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was going to say, Eric. That's why I said fire people in between Lydia there, that you can't force teachers to move, but you can fire them, and that will force them to move to find a new job, and they can learn from their mistakes and hopefully grow from there.
And
because there's nothing more than the competition and the firing of getting better. If you're comfortable, if you know you can't fail as a teacher, you're just going to move around and whatnot. What's
or if you're tenured in a union and you're safe in your tenure, it's getting, you know, talking about it, let's bring up a conversation about unions and that type of thing as well, where you have to compete at a high level and be a solid teacher to continue, you know, to participate in the educational system. I think that's important as well.
Well, I definitely agree. But here's the thing. This was my, when Matt was saying we should stop, I wanted to really interject. And there's one key topic that we haven't discussed is Common Core is really a growing database for the federal government,
yes,
for the educational system. I mean,
Obamacare,
thing is growing a database, yeah, of around everything people do. And this Common Core sets up a huge database of following students from K or even earlier. I mean, it will be K because that's when, unless the preschool mandate set in, but through the 12th grade. And then I was going to have you even ask you to play that first clip again, the first opening 20 seconds, wherein the lady says, I thought I wrote it down here. Let me see if I can find it.
I have a good Ben Swan clip that will really hit on the points that you're concerned about.
Here's
as well.
The one thing, though. It's this is what the lady specifically said, and this is the Common Core video that they produce. So this is not anyone else. This is what they produce. And she said how they do in school and how they do after school. And so that's an indirect way of the database that they're going to collect, that they're going to keep track of everything, not only during school, but after school, to see how to prove, to see what works and whatnot, after you've been through school, to go into this new federal database that tracks everything. And it's this is the direction of the federal government. And us liberty people should be very active in fighting this kind of federal control and activity in our day-to-day lives and the database and the collection of, I mean, we look at, oh, NSA is storing all of our phone calls, all of this and whatnot, emails, text messages, but now they're going to start tracking, recording every aspect of our lives. And I think people need to actually awaken to that aspect that and realize and have a mindset that our government wants to know everything and everything about us.
And it really brings up the idea of personal digital privacy. You should opt in. You should not opt out. If you want to disclose specifics on health data or educational or behavior data, you should provide that on a voluntary basis. It should not be mandated, or it should not be coercively mandated from any government.
Or strictly collected, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's and people don't really understand that for the most part. But, that is a civil liberty conversation where the government doesn't have a right to collect all data in relation to your personal life, your educational or professional life. And I think that's really what you're touching on, right, Kirk?
Yeah, and I don't feel teachers should be graded upon that either. I mean, students, in our class, students all are different. I mean, there's the various, there's the whole bell curve in any classroom. And it's, and that bell curve can change from classroom to classroom. And a teacher can improve upon that or be detrimental or advantage to certain people. But a teacher is only so much. If Common Core was being taught for myself personally, I'll get a personal example. I always in math, I was very good at math, and I always would find the shortest way to do the answer. I hated geometry because of the proofs you have to do. I'm like, no, I know the answer. Boom. Why do I have to write out a page?
You could argue
crap?
That in any mathematical or scientific structure, the most efficient way to a solution is the simplest.
Yeah. And so that's what was so funny. One of the first few times when I heard about Common Core, it was in people's example of how, like we did earlier. And the way I did it, they asked it just like that lady did in our audio clip. The way I answered it was precisely the way Common Core answered it. But I found it hilarious. I'm like, well, yeah, that's the way I taught myself to do it because that's an indirect way of a way that I devised to do it. But that should never be a standard or the one answer for someone to solve the question. The way I devised it was through thought processes of the history of doing problems, math problems and whatnot. And it's in a way that is the simplest way for me to do it in my head. But for that to be the answer that you have to spell out in words on paper, No. I would never back that. And it was just shocking to me that it was a funny example where, yeah, in my head, that's the way I would do it. But I would never force anyone to do it that way. And I would argue against doing it that way unless you did the thought process to lead yourself to that. So it's
maybe there's value in learning different ways to solve problems and thinking critically or different kinds of problem solving. And I think there's value in that. But I think the issue comes up is when you advocate for one method of problem solving over another, especially if it is a way that is more overly complicated or not as simplistic or most efficient.
Yeah, and the most frustrating thing about the mathematics part of Common Core is that math is the universal language. When you look at the way they're trying to teach math in this Common Core, there's no way you can transcend that information worldwide. And the best example was that engineer saying, I have no idea how to answer this question correctly. And that's in the same country. And mathematics is the universal, most pure language that is out there. It transcends all cultures. Mathematics is easily accessible. If you were to some anthropologist, probably the best way is to teach math to, you know, to cross cultures and to start to devise a language behind it. Math is the easiest tool to start it. But Common Core is completely the antithesis of the universal language.
Oh, and just kind of a side note, side comment. I looked that up. The requirement for proficiency in addition and subtraction is fourth grade, not third grade. Just side note.
But it's not that they don't teach it.
It's not that they don't teach it, but it's not required to be. It's what Eric was saying about, you know, teaching to the lowest common denominator. It's not a requirement until you're in the fourth grade. So you could feasibly get through kindergarten through third grade without knowing how to do addition and subtraction.
Which is ridiculous. I've got a nephew who's, I think he's 6 years old. He's in the first grade. Who can already do multiplication and division. Like, what happens in his scenario?
And I bet he taught himself it.
Well, no, his parents taught him how to do it, but
I guarantee, but he had to reason through it himself.
Well, right, and his teachers were not the ones who brought him to that point. He's a very smart young man, and he's learning beyond the potential, the average. I mean, I'm not expecting most first graders to be able to do multiplication and division, but at the same time, what does that do for him if you base your education on the requirement that he knows what he knows 3 years from now? What, you know, what's that teach him?
That's the problem of arguing schematics, because this No Child Left, or I mean, no, this Common Core is at the beginning stages. It is designed to be fluid, yet they say it's going to be, you know, kind of rigid, but it is going to change dramatically over the coming years. And so all these little arguments are only going to be fuel to be, oh, we're going to get better. We're going to do this better. Well, we're going to do this fix, you know. And that's the whole nature of what the federal government does. And so it's just, there's no reason that it needs to be set up this way.
Well, and this is, and I think this goes back to the, you know, the one size fits all of education. And I think it would be interesting, it'll be interesting to see, and I don't know how this will play out, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with, you know, high potential students, you know, kids that are at the higher end of the spectrum in school, and there's a lot of different programs, and I'm kind of personally familiar with kind of the Minnetonka, Chaska, Chanhassen school structure, but you know, they have specialized programs for kids that are high potential or maybe struggle with reading, struggle with math, ESL, things like that. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how those kind of more tailor-made programs will, if they will be, you know, but if they will be, you know, able to work with the Common Core standards or not.
Yeah. Well, in the research I've done in Common Core, I wish I had the quotes and the names, but a lot of people were arguing that, Eric, it's a little different than you say, the lowest common denominator. It's teaching to the average is what the Common Core seems to be. It's not teaching to the lowest. It still has a demanding rigor of academics in English and math, but it's teaching in the middle, and what the criticism I've heard is that the advanced students are really going to suffer from this, and that it's, and then people are going to be discouraged. I would predict that the dropout rate will increase in the coming years if Common Core is more and more widely implemented.
Yeah, I don't think really. High achievers, it matters at all. I mean, it's more the, you know, the upper middle and lower. The high achievers are going to do whatever they're going to do. It doesn't really matter anyways. And a lot of the real high achievers don't even go to class and they don't participate.
Well, and you learn it in college. I mean,
the stars, it doesn't affect them. They're going to be good regardless.
Well, that's the whole thing. This is just a standards. This is all just to teach that everyone should be have this baseline of education. Yeah. And but that baseline is very skewed and very erratic in the way they go about it, how they seem to be reverse engineering to where you should get the fractals. And so we'll start teaching fractals in first grade here and there. And it's very skewed in a way. And it's, and then the whole fact of it being copyrighted and monopolized in a sense that it's very damning for our society. And if this sticks, the growth of the how we're leaning towards more and more federal control over the whole thing, that this is going to fail. What's coming next? And it's a scary thought.
Hey, so Kirk, let's we all like Ben Swan, I think here. Let's listen to a clip and have a 5-minute conversation afterwards and wrap up the show. So I'm gonna go ahead. This is a decent clip on his analysis of Common Core. We can discuss and then wrap up here.
It is called Common Core, and the idea behind it is reasonable. States working together to create national standards for education, standards that are designed to be robust and relevant in the real world. Well, it sounds good. So why is there growing opposition in Ohio and around the country to Common Core? Ben has the reality check you won't see anywhere else.
Well, chances are you may not have heard of Common Core before. And yet Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana have all adopted the Common Core state standards. Go to the website, and here's what you'll find. Common Core is focused on two things, mathematics standards and English language arts standards. It was created by the National Governors Association Center for Best Practices and the Council of Chief State School Officers. So this isn't some federal unfunded mandate, and all of it sounds good, right? So why is there growing opposition in Ohio and across the nation to Common Core? The group Ohioans Against Common Core say that what the public has been told about this initiative so far is not the truth. For instance, even though the National Governors Association is behind the initiative, it's not actually state-led. The Common Core standards were initiated by private interests in Washington, D.C., not from state lawmakers. The National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers are both D.C.-based trade associations. In fact, the majority of the creative work was done by a group called Achieve Incorporated. It's a progressive nonprofit group based out of D.C. and received a lot of funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Okay, so Common Core wasn't created by the states, but 45 states in the country have adopted it, so it has to be a good thing, right? Well, even though the National Governors Association is cited as the author of Common Core, the feds have had a big hand in it. The Department of Education helped to create Common Core, poured hundreds of millions of dollars into two consortia that are creating national tests aligned with Common Core. And the states that adopted it, well, they did so to remain eligible for Race to the Top federal funding. So with the feds involved, what does Common Core actually mean for states? Well, for starters, Common Core Establishment no longer claims that the standards are internationally benchmarked. Their website now states they're informed by the standards of other countries, though there's no definition of informed by. It means streamlined curriculum created not by the states, but by private associations and nonprofits in Washington, D.C. The Fordham Institute, a proponent of Common Core, admits that several states had standards that were superior to CC, and that many states had standards at least as good. Common Core has been described by many as a, quote, race to the middle. Well, what this means for you is that ultimately Common Core means that states will, over time, give up control over curriculum in their schools. States are not allowed to change any of the Common Core standards. Common Core says, well, look, they're not about curriculum. They're only about those standards. And yet, those two testing consortia being funded by the U.S. Department of Education have admitted in their grant applications that, yeah, in fact, they would use the money to develop curriculum models for the nation. And that is Reality Check.
You can find the sources for the story posted on our website, fox19.com. If you'd like to make your voice heard, head over to...
Great. The National Governors Association.
Yes.
Anyone know any much about them?
I don't.
I don't either, and I meant to look into it, but I never did because I saw that NGA, National Governors Association, pop up all the time as one of the excuses of Common Core that the NGA backs it, so, you know, we should implement this. But it really shows the – I mean, there's no doubt the public school system has been failing us or failing society in a sense. The more, like Ron Paul said, the more and more – federal it gets, the more and more national, that the worse it gets. And so the Governors Association, each state has their own state mandates or standards for their educational policy. And like Ben Swan said, the Common Core is less than, is substandard to some of the state's current standards. And so all these failing public school systems in each state can now start passing the buck to the federal government because, oh, the federal government isn't giving enough funding. They're setting these standards. I don't know. The list could be endless. It doesn't matter. It's just the whole – the further you get from the localized entity and control, the more national and federal it gets, you can't – it just – passes the buck down, and it's like one of those clips said, we're sending the kids down the river in the name of saving education, and it's the way that our whole country is going, and it's the antithesis of liberty, and hopefully people like us are growing in popularity, and that we reach people here and there and open people's minds, and this whole liberty mantra, Common Core, is like, before we started this, I was talking about how this is kind of a tough aspect to talk about it, but this has been flowing pretty well tonight, I would say. And it's, this should be by, this is not a Republican or Democrat aspect. Both parties, both aspects of everyone are coming together and against this Common Core, teachers, even administrators, principals, people that write the curriculum of these educational standards are coming against this Common Core, and it's going to fail. And it's just, how does it fail? Does it fail because it's poorly done? Because the questions are so crazy that, oh no, we need more federal involvement to have more better questions, better standards? No, this needs to be more on the liberty aspect, the localized areas, more control in the local school. To pin the things on, pin our education of our children on the principals and the teachers and the administrations of these schools.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, Kirk. And I think, you know, some of the main focus behind Common Core is STEM. But now we have the technology to focus on the individual and focus on the individual's individual students' strengths and weaknesses, and understand, you know, where their interests lie, and you know, what are the best career paths, or what the career paths an individual cares about, and that's what you should focus on. You shouldn't focus on hitting standardized scoring metrics. You should focus on what area a student can excel in, and that should be the focus.
Can I ask you that though? Because so let's say in the beginnings, so say here's a conspiracy. I believe this whole Common Core thing is to fail, but it's going to set up the whole database system for. From kids to adulthood,
there is a certain level of education and job.
But I'm just throwing that out as a conspiracy, whatever. But the whole point was, so should we take that data from each student and say, all right, you're good at this, and so we're going to adjust your curriculum from whenever they learn what you're good at from third grade on. All around that scenario.
Well, Germany's done that for years.
Well, you should keep it private to the individual and focus on increasing the individual's skill set and their interest area. It shouldn't be a metric to empower a school district or an individual teacher. It should be around improving the student and in whatever area that they are interested in and they excel in. Okay. So
well, Germany, things were all right. Sorry, Matt.
Germany's got an interesting system where they start out early on and they watch how talented of a student you are, and they move you into a different track based on how talented you are. And there's essentially three tracks. There's a remedial, a normal, and then an advanced track.
But
and based on your ability to succeed in school, they move you up or down.
But, you know, sometimes remedial track students they just don't match the predefined metrics.
Yeah, well, that's
my argument is that you should tailor fit educational programs around, students' levels of interest and their aptitude, which are oftentimes aligned
and unique.
But that's exactly what
exactly
a communist state would
unique.
Do.
What's that?
A very centralized government that controls everything. Would do exactly that, though. They would test at each grade or age or whatnot, figure out what these people are best at, and move them into that thing, and you're stuck in that slave mentality
you're not
the
stuck.
Rest of your life.
But
that's
not
what it does lead to.
No, it doesn't. It shouldn't. I disagree.
But Eric, that's my whole point. Like when I said I don't know if I talked about this in our meetings or in our podcast, but I'm all for massive data, for massive surveillance, but a decentralized central government where you can prove your the harm doing. If there were no BS laws all over the place to where fine-tuning this and that to where it's really down to the crux of liberty – of where you can do what you want as long as you're not harming anyone, to where you can use that data, that mass surveillance, to prove your innocence.
There shouldn't be mass surveillance.
And so we are becoming, though, this technology advanced, you know, civilization, to where we can metric this stuff, this information, to where
all these students are.
Hey, I disagree.
But you just hear me out for a second, though. So as it goes into what Eric's saying, that yes, so we can store all this information and follow the progress, and we can deem what these our kids are good at, and we can follow suit in that. But without
that's
a database, you can't do it. But when you have a centralized government that has the authority to dictate outcomes and what we and this fascist socialist world government that's being created. It's only harm is going to be done. But in a truly liberalized, liberty-minded government that's decentralized, very locally based, that information is very powerful. But that's how we get snookered into this federal government control over our lives is because, yes, this information is powerful. So they utilize it to make better programs that always fail. And then they can always come out with a new program because now we have this new data to improvise to implement this new policy and whatnot. But if do you see where I'm going with this?
Can I kind of
the technology
comment on that?
Is there to be utilized?
Can I comment on that and then add a couple quick thoughts that I had? So I think Kirk, I think what you're kind of alluding to is sort of progressivism and that the idea that I don't know maybe the state or the government is organic or constantly changing and constantly growing.
Minimized, no.
Yeah, right?
If it's minimized, it's usable. If the government's maximized, this data is tyrannical.
Yeah, I don't know. Can I quick add a couple thoughts that I had just kind of wrapping up here?
By all means.
Okay, yeah. So these are kind of two quick thoughts that I had, and then kind of relating it to Liberty. But I think it's just kind of I wanted to add in and to comment that math and English aren't the only standards that are a part of Common Core. There is also a social studies history component that's still in development. I think a science as well, but I wouldn't swear to it. So we could even, you know, go down the trail of what the implications of that are in terms of, you know, is it a true social studies education? Is it indoctrination? Like what does that curriculum look like? That could be a whole, I know this group, we could make a whole podcast about that. So that was one comment I wanted to make, was just that this isn't limited solely to English and mathematics per se. Then the second thing I wanted to add was that just kind of a thought I had was, you know, how this kind of came about in relation to No Child Left Behind. And that is that, you know, No Child Left Behind testing requirements or implementation to the states. And so in that way, you know, states were making tests that were unbelievably simple in order to, you know, have this data that said, you know, we have these high test scores. So I think that's another kind of source of this Common Core where, I mean, it's coming from, there's a lot of different forces that are pushing this, but that's one argument you'll hear from proponents of Common Core is that this nationalized standard will give a more clear reflection of where students are academically. And then I think those are just two points I wanted to add. But I think relating this to Liberty, you know, we did that podcast a couple weeks ago about what we believe, like what is Liberty, what do we believe? And I think, you know, it comes back to a lot of things we've already talked about in this podcast that you know, Common Core is not compatible with a lot of things, at least a federally structured education a federal structure of education is just not compatible with a lot of things we believe being, you know, individual liberty choices and that, you know, individuals have different strengths and weaknesses, different preferences, and want to live their lives in various ways. And I think we can all agree that Common Core, or at least, you know, a federal structure or requirements for education standards is not compatible with that. So those are just a few things I wanted to add.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I think if we're going to use standards and technology to evaluate student progress, it should be more tailored to the individual rather than the whole subset of individuals. I think that's much more beneficial to students and to the population in general. And that's the main problem that I have with Common Core. And I think I mentioned that earlier in the podcast. It's a standardized way of testing progress for both the students and teachers. So moving high performing teachers from one district to another, or retaining them or whatever, or measuring how well students do. But to me, you should be focusing on the students, and they have a myriad of different strengths that may not show up in standardized testing. So to me, Common Core is deficient because of that reason. And I just don't think it's a standard that should be supported going forward.
Okay, well, I'm thinking we're probably good to go for the end of the show. Does anybody have anything else that they'd like to comment on?
I forgot.
No.
All right, seeing none, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you joining us tonight. This has been Liberty Southwest Podcast number 8. Have a good day.
One thing, if anyone has any feedback, we'd love to hear.
All right, this has been podcast number 8. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.